Hair was worn a little longer over his ears than before, and his shoulders were broader than she remembered. She had to restrain herself from touching his cheek, from falling into his arms. She bowed her head. "Jedediah." She gazed up into his brown eyes. "You look fit. You look the same as you have always looked. You wear the time well."
"You look, I guess..."
"The word you are searching for is old. I look old."
"Ah, Verna, a few wrinkles."
He glanced down at her body.
"A few pounds do not diminish a beauty such as yours."
"I see your tongue is still in good form around women." She glanced to his plain tan robes. "And I can see you've been a good student as always and have managed to advance yourself. I'm proud of you, Jedediah."
He shrugged off the compliment and pressed his fingers together. "Tell me about the new one you brought in."
Her eyes narrowed. "You've not seen me in 20-odd years since I rose from your bed to go on my journey. And that is your question for me? Not, how have I fared? Not, how do I feel about you after all this time? Not, has your heart found another? Well, I guess the shock of seeing how I've aged has made those questions fly right from your head."
The sly smile stayed on his lips. "Verna, you're not a silly girl. Surely you must realize that in the passing of so much time, neither of us could be expected to..."
"Of course I know that. I had no delusions of us. I had simply hoped to return and be treated with a little tact and sensitivity."
He shrugged again. "I'm sorry, Verna. I always thought of you as a woman who appreciated candor, one who had no use for word sports."
His eyes went out of focus.
"I guess I've learned so much about life since back then, when I was so young."
He removed her glare from his handsome face and started away. "Good night, Jedediah."
"What of my question?"
His voice had an unpleasant edge to it. He softened it.
"What's the new one like?"
She halted but didn't turn. "You were there. I saw you. What you saw of Richard is what he is.
I also saw what happened to you.
I'm gaining a little influence among some of the sisters. Maybe I can do something to help you with your situation." He gestured vaguely with the hand. "If you're open with me and satisfy my curiosity, maybe I can help you out of your unfortunate predicament." She started out again. "Good night, Jedediah."
"I'll be seeing you around the palace, Verna. Think on it."
She couldn't believe how ignorant she had been all those years ago. She remembered Jedediah as caring and sincere. Maybe her memory was addled. Maybe she was just thinking of herself and hadn't given him the chance to be kinder. She must look a mess. She should have cleaned herself up, put on a nice dress, at least fixed her unruly hair before she saw Jedediah. But she had not had the chance. Maybe if she had touched his cheek, he would have remembered the spark of something. Maybe remembered the tears he shed the day she left, and the promises he had made. Promises she knew the moment they left his lips would be broken before their echo faded so long ago. She came to the hall that led to the novices' apartments. She stood looking down at the doors. She was tired. Sun up to sundown in the stables was going to be exhausting. She turned the other way instead. She had one other thing to do before she slept. Pasha came to a stop before a doorway, with a casing of stone carved to look like vines. Nestled in the center of the stone vines was a large, round-topped, fumed oak door. Pasha lifted an eyebrow to him.
"Your dungeon."
"There's no bolt on the outside of the door. How will you lock me in?"
She seemed surprised by the question.
"We don't lock our boys in. You're free to come and go as you please."
Richard frowned. "You mean I'm free to roam this building?"
"No, you're free to go wherever you wish. You may go most anywhere in the palace or into the city if you wish. Most of the boys spend a great deal of their time in the city."
Her face reddened a little at the last of what she said, and she looked away from his face. "What about the country around the city?"
She shrugged and then pulled the shoulder of her blue dress back up a little.
"Of course. I don't know why you would want to go into the countryside. None of the other boys do. But there's nothing stopping you from going outside either the palace or the city."
A worried wrinkle came to her brow.
But you must stay clear of the Hagen Woods. It is extremely dangerous. Were you warned about the Hagen Woods? Were you shown where it is while you journeyed to the palace?
Richard nodded. How far may I go into the countryside?
The Radahan will prevent you from going too far afield. We must be able to find you, but the limit is a good number of miles in a radius around the Palace of the Prophets.
How many miles?
Farther than you would want to go. I expect almost all the way to the land of the savages.
You mean the Bakaban Mana?
She nodded. Nearly that far, I would expect.
Unguarded?
She put her hands on her hips. You are assigned to me. I will accompany you most everywhere you go for now. After our boys are more experienced, they go off on their own when they wish.
Whenever I want, I can simply wander around.
Well, you live here at the palace, of course, and you must be around for your lessons. I will give you lessons, and so will a number of the sisters. We will teach you to touch your han, and then once you are able to do that, we will begin to teach you how to control it.
Why different sisters? Why not just one or you?
Because sometimes the han of certain people works better together. Also, the sisters have more experience than me, have more knowledge. There may be one or several of us who are better able to help you, and so different sisters give you lessons until we discover with whom you work best.
Will Sister Verna be one of those?
Pasha gave him a look from under her eyebrows. Verna is no longer a sister. She is no longer entitled to the appellation. She is a novice now and should be addressed simply as Verna. Novices, other than the one assigned to you, that is me, are not allowed to give lessons. Novices of the first rank, like Verna, are not allowed to have anything to do with our boys. The duty of a novice is to learn, not to teach.
Richard didn't think he could ever think of Sister Verna as simply Verna. It sounded too strange to him. When will she be a sister again?
She must serve as a novice and advance as any other novice. I started scrubbing pots in the kitchen when I was little. It has taken me this long to be given this chance. One day, if Verna works hard, as I have, then she, too, will have the chance to be a sister of the light. Until then, Verna is a novice.
Richard fumed at the thought of Sister Verna being demoted on his account. By the time she was a sister again, she would be an old woman. He changed the subject. And why are we allowed to roam around?
Because you are not a danger to the people. Someday, when you learn to control your han, then you will begin to have limits placed on where you may go. The people in the city are afraid of boys who can wield the power. Unfortunate incidents have happened in the past. And so once a boy becomes skilled at handling his han, he is then restricted from the city. As the boys advance as wizards, they are placed under more restrictions, until near the end and their release when they are confined to certain areas of the palace. But for now, you're free to go almost anywhere you wish. I will know where you are all the time by your Radahan.
You mean any sister can find me with this cursed thing?
No, only the one who gave it to you because she held it and recognizes its power. And since I'm in charge of you, I must be able to know where you are at all times. So I will need to allow my han to recognize your Radahan's unique feel.
She pushed the door open and went into the dark room. With a sweep of her arm, lamps set all around the room sprang to flame. You must teach me that trick, he muttered.
It's not a trick. It's simply my han, and that's the simplest of many things I will teach you.
The ceiling of the huge room was painted around its molding with different colored lines in intricate patterns. The walls were paneled in cherry of a warm color. Tall windows hung with rich, deep blue moire drapes looked out on the night. There was a fireplace with a white column to each side. Most of the wood floor was covered with thick carpets. Comfortable-looking chairs and couches were placed about the room and arranged in front of the fireplace. Richard thought that his whole house would fit twice into the room. He slipped the pack off his back and leaned it against the wall next to the fireplace. He stood the quiver of arrows and the unstrung bow beside it. He went to the right to a set of double doors made up of small panes of glass and covered over with sheer cream-colored curtains. Beyond the doors was an expansive balcony overlooking the city. Stone urns filled with flowers were set about the slate floor of the balcony. He put his fingers to the marble railing as he looked to his right, past the sparkling lights of the city to the hills from where he had come.
The sunsets are beautiful from this balcony, Pasha said.
Richard wasn't interested in sunsets. He studied the courtyard below,
the gates, the roads, the patrolling soldiers, and the bridges to the city and the hills beyond. He tried to fix a map of it all into his head. He went back inside and marched to the other end of the room, to the doorway there. Beyond was a bedroom almost as large as the first room. It held the largest bed he had ever seen, covered with a deep purple quilt. Another pair of glassed doors led to another balcony, and this one looked south, out over the sea. "It's a beautiful view," Pasha said. "A romantic view." She saw that he was looking to the sections of the palace below. She pointed. "Across that courtyard are some of the women's quarters, where most of the sisters' rooms are." She shook the finger at him. "You will stay away from them, young man." She turned away. "Unless a sister invites you to her room," she added under her breath. "What do I call you?" he asked. "Sister Pasha?" She giggled. "No, I'm a novice, though I hope to become a sister if I prove myself with you. Until then, I am simply Pasha." Richard turned to her, directing a glare to her eyes. "My name is Richard. Do you have trouble remembering it?" "Look here, you are assigned to me, and if that is too difficult for you to remember, you have no chance of ever becoming a sister, because if you insist on trying to demean me by calling me by other than my name, I will see to it that you quickly fail in your test." He leaned over her as he glowered down at her wide eyes. "Do you understand, Pasha?" She swallowed. "You will not raise your voice to me, young..." She lifted her chin a little. "You will not raise your voice to me, Richard." "That's better. Thank you." He hoped she would leave it at that. He was in no mood to be kind if she was not. He turned away. This balcony held less of a view of the things he was interested in, and so he went back into the bedroom. She followed on his heels. "Look here, Richard. You will learn some manners, or else I will..." That was the end of his indulgence. He spun to her. She lurched to a halt, almost colliding with him. "You've never been in charge of anyone before, have you?" She didn't move. "I would say that this is the first time you have been given responsibility, and you are terrified you will muck it up. Since you are inexperienced, you think acting like a tyrant will fool people into thinking you know what you are doing." "Well, I..." Her voice trailed off as he leaned down, putting his face close to hers. "You should not be frightened of letting me see that you are inexperienced at commanding people, Pasha. What you should be frightened of is that I will kill you." Her eyes narrowed with indignation. "Don't you dare threaten me. This is a game to you, a way for you to fulfill some arcane rules by prancing around, pulling your little puppy around by his collar and training him to lick your hand so you may gain a new rank." He gritted his teeth as he lowered his voice. "It is not a game to me, Pasha. It's a matter of life and death. I am a prisoner, held in a collar, as a beast or a slave. I have only as much control of my life as you people allow. I know I am going to be tortured by you as a way of breaking my will. You are wrong, Pasha, if you think I'm making a threat. I'm not. I am making a promise." "I'm not what you think of me, Richard," she said in a small voice. "I want to be your friend." "You are not my friend. You are my captor." He held a finger up in front of her face. "Don't you ever turn your back to me, because I will kill you just as I killed the last person who held me prisoner in a collar." She blinked up at him. "Richard, I don't know what happened to you before, but we're not like that. I want to be a sister of the light to help people see the Creator's goodness." Richard was dangerously close to letting the magic slip from his control. He struggled to maintain his grip. He had other things to do. "I am not interested in your theology. Just remember what I told you." She smiled. "I will. I apologize for making you angry by calling you other than by your name. Please forgive me. I've never done this before. I was only doing as I thought I should, following the rules as I was trained." "Forget the rules. Just be yourself, and you will have less trouble in life." "If that would help you believe that I'm only trying to help you, then that's what I shall do." She pointed. "Here, sit on the edge of the bed."
"Why?"
Though she didn't move, he felt a gentle push. He fell back to sit on the edge of the bed. "Don't..." She stepped between his legs, close to him. "Hush. Let me do my job.
I told you before, I must let my Han come to know your Rada Han, so I will know where you are at all times. She put her hands to each side of his neck over the collar. She closed her eyes. Her breasts were right in front of his face, moving with each breath. He felt a soft tingling sensation that sank all the way to his toes and then came back up through him. It was slightly uncomfortable, but not unpleasant. And in fact, the longer it went on, the better it felt. When she took her hands away, the absence of the sensation was agony for a moment. The world seemed to hum and spin. He shook his head.
What did you do?
I simply let my Han come to know your Rada Han. She looked a little dazed. She swallowed as a tear ran down her cheek. And something of your Han, your essence. She turned away. Richard stood.
Does that mean that you will always know where I am now, by my collar?
She nodded weakly as she strode across the room. Her voice regained its control.
What are your preferences for food? Your special requirements?
I don't eat meat. She stopped in her tracks. That's one I've never heard before. And I guess I don't like cheese anymore either. She considered a moment and then walked on. I will tell the cooks your special requirements. A plan was forming in his head, and she wasn't part of it. He needed to get rid of her. Pasha went to a tall, pickled pine wardrobe. It was filled with fine clothes. There were trousers of a smooth weave, at least a dozen shirts, mostly white, some with ruffles, and coats of every color. These are yours, she said. If everyone was surprised I was grown, why are they the size of a grown man? She inspected the various items, feeling the fabric, taking some out and holding them up for a better look.
Someone must have known. Verna must have told them.
Sister Verna. She put a black coat back. I'm sorry, Richard, but it is just Verna now. She pulled out a white shirt. Do you like this?
No, I would look foolish wearing fancy things like that.
She smiled coquettishly. I think you would look very handsome in it. But if it doesn't please you, there are coins on the table over there. I'll show you some shops in the city, and you may purchase whatever you like better.
Richard glanced to the marble-topped table. There was a silver bowl of silver coins, and next to it a gold bowl, heaped full with gold coins. If he worked his whole life as a guide, he would never earn even half that much gold.
It's not mine.
Of course it is. You're a guest of the palace, and the palace provides whatever our guests require. If you use that up, it will be replaced.
She pulled out a red coat with gold brocade on the shoulders and cuffs. Her eyes brightened.
Richard, this would look simply grand on you.
Even if you cover a collar with precious gems, it's still a collar.
This has nothing to do with your Rada Han. What you're wearing is disgusting. You look like some savage from the woods.
She held the red coat open. Here, try this on. He snatched the coat from her hands and threw it on the bed. Gripping her by the arm, he marched her to the door in the front room.
Richard, stop it. What are you doing?
He pulled the door open. I'm tired. It's been a long day. Good night, Pasha.
Richard, I'm only trying to help you look better. You look uncivilized in that outfit. You look like some huge beast.
He went calm as he took in her blue dress, blue the color of Kaelin's wedding dress. That color does not become you, he said. Does not become you at all. She stood in the hall, staring at him with big brown eyes. He kicked the door shut. He waited a few minutes and then checked the hall. There was no sign of her. He went to his pack beside the fireplace and started taking things out. He wouldn't need everything. No need carrying all his extra clothes. As he was stretching the string to the bow, there was a soft rap at the door. He crept across the carpets, listening. Maybe she would go away if he didn't answer it. He didn't need her hanging around telling him what to wear. He had important things to do. The soft knock came again. Maybe it wasn't Pasha. Richard pulled his knife. He yanked the door open.
Sister Verna!
I just saw Pasha running down the hall in tears. I'm surprised at you, Richard. She lifted an eyebrow to him. I didn't think it would take you that long. I've been hiding around a corner, afraid I would be caught while I waited. A shawl capped her curly hair and spread down over her shoulders. Did you have to make her cry?
She is fortunate I didn't make her bleed.
She lifted the shawl from her head and settled it around her shoulders. A small smile touched her lips.
May I come in?
He held out his arm in invitation.
And it is simply Verna, she said as she stepped through the threshold. I am not a sister.
He slipped the knife back into its sheath. I'm sorry, but I don't think I could bring myself to calling you anything else. To me, you are Sister Verna.
It is not proper to address me as sister.
She looked around the room as he closed the door.
How are the accommodations?
They would not embarrass a king. Sister Verna, I know you won't believe me, but I'm really sorry about what happened. I didn't mean to bring my troubles down on you. A broad grin spread on her face.
You have been a constant trouble to me, Richard, but for once, this trouble was not caused by you. Another brought this trouble upon me.
Sister, I know I caused you to be broken to a novice. I didn't intend that. But the part about you being sent to work in the stables, that was your own doing.
Things are not always as they seem, Richard.
There was a twinkle in her eye.
I hate scrubbing pots. When I was a novice, when I was young, I hated that more than anything else. I'm not happy in a kitchen, and less so with my hands in scalding water. I like horses much better. They don't talk back or argue with me. I like being around horses. More so since you destroyed the bits and I became friends with Jessup. Sister Marin thought she held the reins, as it were. But she was doing what I wished.
Richard smiled with one side of his mouth. You are a very devious woman, Sister Verna. I'm proud of you. But I'm still sorry you're put back to novice because of me. She shrugged.
I am here to serve the Creator. It matters not how. And this is not your doing. The prelate's orders are what caused me to be broken to a novice.
You mean the order she wrote in the book? She forbade you from using your power on me, didn't she?
How did you know that?
I figured it out. You were often angry enough to spit fire at me, but you never used your power to stop me. I don't think that would have happened unless you were under orders to watch, but not to interfere. After all, if the Radahan is used to control, why else would you not use that control? She shook her head to herself.
You are a very devious person yourself, Richard. How long have you known?
Since I read the book in the tower.
Why are you here, sister? I wanted to see if you were all right. Starting tomorrow, I won't get the chance again. At least not for a very long time. Not until I'm raised to Sister of the Light again. First-rank novices aren't allowed to have anything to do with young wizards. The penalty is quite severe.
Your first day as a novice and already you're breaking the rules. You shouldn't be here. You'll be up to your elbows in scalding water and dirty pots if they catch you. She shrugged.
Some things are more important than rules.
Richard frowned at the distant look in her eyes.
Why don't you sit?
I don't have time. I only came to keep a promise. She pulled something from a pocket.
And to bring you this.
She lifted his hand and placed something in it, then closed his fingers around it. When Richard opened his fingers and looked, his knees almost buckled. It was the lock of Kaelin's hair he had thrown away. Sister Verna clasped her hands together.
The first night we were together, I found that.
Without looking up, he whispered,
What do you mean you found it?
She leaned back and looked up at the ceiling.
After you fell asleep, after you decided not to kill me, I went for a walk, and I found it.
His eyes slid closed. I can't take this, he managed to make himself say. I have set her free.
Kaelin made a great sacrifice to save your life. I promised her that I would not let you forget that she loves you.
Richard's strength had vanished. The muscles in his legs quivered. His hand shook. I can't take this. She sent me away. I have set her free.
Sister Verna spoke softly. She loves you, Richard. Please, as a favor to me, take it. I have violated the rules to bring this to you. I made a promise to Kaelin to make sure you know she loves you. I was reminded again today what a rare thing real love is.
Richard felt as if the whole weight of the palace had fallen down on him. All right, sister. As a favor to you, but I know she doesn't want me. If you love someone, you don't ask them to put a collar around their neck. You don't send them away. She wishes to be free. I love her, and so I have set her free. Someday, Richard, I hope you'll realize how much she has sacrificed and the truth of her love. Love is a precious thing and should not be forgotten. I don't know what your life holds in store, but someday you will find love again. But I think you need a friend more than anything else right now. I'm sincere in my offer, Richard. Will you take this collar off me? She was silent a moment. Her voice came heavy with regret. I cannot, Richard. It would bring you to harm. I have a duty to preserve your life. The collar must stay on. He nodded.
I have no friends. I am in enemy territory in enemy hands.
That's not true. But I'm afraid that, as a novice, I won't have the chance to convince you otherwise. Pasha looks like a nice young woman. Try to make friends with her, Richard. You need a friend.
I can't make friends with someone I may have to kill. I meant every word I said today, sister.
I know, Richard, she whispered. I know. But Pasha is almost your age. Sometimes it's easier to make friends with those your own age. I think she would like to be your friend. For a novice, this is as important a time as it is for a young wizard. The relationship between a novice and the wizard she is assigned is unique. The bond that will grow is very special and will last the lifetime of each. She, too, is frightened. Her whole life she has been a student, a novice. Now, for the first time, she is the teacher. Not only the boy learns, but the girl, too. They both are entering a new life. It is a very special thing for both.
Slave and master, that is the only bond. She sighed.
I doubt any novice has ever faced a task like the one Pasha will have. Try to be understanding of her, Richard. Pasha is going to have her hands full with you. The Creator knows the prelate herself would have her hands full with you.
Richard stared off at nothing. Have you ever killed anyone you loved, sister?
Well, no.
Richard lifted the Aegeal in his fist. Denna held me by my magic, as do the sisters. She kept a collar around my neck, as do the sisters. They had tortured her until she was mad enough to do the same thing to me. I understood how she could do it, because I would have done anything she said to keep from being hurt anymore. He was hardly aware of the pain from the Aegeal ripping through him. I understood her, and I loved her. A tear ran down his face. That was the only way I was able to escape. She controlled the rage of the sword. Because I was able to love her, I was able to turn the blade of the sword of truth white.
Dear Creator,
Sister Verna whispered, her eyes wide.
You have turned the sword's blade white?
Richard closed his eyes and nodded. I had to take the love of her into my heart. Only then could I turn the blade white. Only then could I run it through her while she looked lovingly into my eyes. Only because I loved her could I kill her and escape. As long as I live, I will never be able to forgive myself. Sister Verna embraced him protectively.
Dear Creator, she whispered, what have you done to your child?
Richard pushed her away. Go, sister, before you get into trouble. He wiped his eyes. I'm being foolish.
She gripped his shoulders. Why didn't you tell me this before?
He wiped his sleeve across his nose. It's not something I'm proud of. And you are the enemy, sister. He looked to her wet eyes. I told you the truth. I told the other sisters the truth today. I will kill anyone I must. Sister, I'm capable of killing anyone. I'm the bringer of death. I'm a monster. That's why Kaelin wanted me sent away.
She brushed his hair back from his face. She loves you, Richard. She was trying to save your life. Someday you will see that.
She sighed.
I'm sorry. I must go. Will you be all right?
His smile was empty. I don't think so, sister. I think there is going to be war. I think I'm going to end up killing sisters. I hope you aren't one of them.
She wiped her fingers across his cheek. We never know what the Creator has in store for us.
If this Creator of yours has any power, I think you'll be restored to sister a lot sooner than you think, sister.
I must go. Good luck to you, Richard. Have faith.
As soon as she was gone, he threw his cloak around his shoulders and put on his pack. He had to act now, while they were still afraid of him, while they were still unsure. He checked that the sword was clear in its scabbard. He hooked the quiver on his pack and shouldered his bow as he moved out onto the balcony. With a running knot, Richard attached the rope to the stone railing. He put his knife between his teeth and then slipped over the edge into the darkness, into his element. Chapter 51. Night didn't seem to diminish the number of people on the streets of Tanimura. The little fires cooking meat on sticks still burned, and the hawkers still conducted a brisk business. Men called to him to come throw dice with them. Once they saw his collar, people tried to entice him into buying everything from food to shell necklaces for his lady. He told them that he had no coins. They laughed, saying that the palace would pay for anything he wanted. Richard hunched his shoulders and kept walking. Women dressed in flimsy, revealing clothes pressed against him, giggling and smiling as they ran their hands over him, trying to get fingers into his pockets. They made him offers he could hardly believe. Pushing didn't get them away. His glare did. Richard was relieved to leave the city behind, to leave the lights of torches, lamps, candles, and fires behind, to leave behind the smells and the noise. He breathed easier when he was into the moonlit country. He glanced over his shoulder at the twinkling lights while he climbed the hills. He was constantly aware of the collar around his neck and wondered what would happen if he went too far, though from what Pasha had told him, that was many more miles than he intended to go. Still, he worried she might be wrong, and that the slack in his chain might suddenly snap tight. Finally, he reached a satisfactory spot. He surveyed the grassy prominence overlooking the city in the distance. A little way off to the side, in the swale, he could see the dark shapes of old trees looming up in the moonlight. Shadows black as death lurked in the gaps. Richard stared at the menacing gloom for a time, transfixed by a faint, lingering desire to go into the waiting folds of its night. Something in him hungered to go in there and call forth the magic. Something in him lusted to bring forth the rage, to let it vent its wrath, vent his wrath. It felt as if his frustration at being held prisoner against his will, his anger at being a helpless prisoner, his fear at not knowing what was going to happen to him, and his heartache for Kaelin, all needed to be let out, like pounding a fist against a wall when you were angry. Somehow those woods promised him that release. Richard finally turned from the Hagen Woods and set about collecting firewood. With his knife, he whittled a pile of shavings into a bare spot he had scooped out with his boot. Striking steel and flint, he started the shavings to smoldering, and once they had taken with a good flame, he piled on some wood. Once the fire was going nicely, he set out a pot, poured in water, and started cooking rice and beans. While he waited for it to cook, he finished a small piece of bannock he still had left. He sat, his arms curled around his knees, and watched the dark woods, the Haken Woods. He watched the city shimmering in the distance. The sky overhead was a sparkling canopy of stars. He watched the sky, too, waiting to see a familiar shape blacken a patch of stars. After a time, he heard a soft thud behind him. He laughed when the furry arms grabbed him and tumbled him onto the ground. Gratch gurgled with his throaty laugh, his arms and legs and wings trying to enwrap his opponent. Richard tickled his ribs, and Gratch roared with a deep, growling laughter. The tussle ended with Gratch finally on top, hugging Richard with arms and wings. Richard embraced the little gar tightly.
"Gratch, Long, Richard."
Richard squeezed him tighter. "I love you too, Gratch." Gratch put his wrinkly nose to Richard's. His glowing green eyes looked down, and he let out a throaty giggle. Richard wrinkled his nose.
"Gratch, your breath smells."
He sat up, holding the gar in his lap. "Did you catch some food on your own?" Gratch nodded enthusiastically. Richard hugged him again.
"I'm so proud of you, and you did it without blood flies. What did you get?"
Gratch cocked his head to the side. His furry ears turned forward.
"Did you get a turtle?"
Richard asked. Gratch giggled and shook his head.
"Did you get a deer?"
Gratch sagged with a regretful growl.
"Did you get a rabbit?"
Gratch bounced and shook his head, enjoying the game.
I give up. What did you have to eat?
Gratch covered his eyes with his claws, peeking out between them.
A raccoon? You got a raccoon?
Gratch nodded with a toothy grin, then threw his head back and roared as he pounded his chest.
Richard patted the beast's back. Good for you. Very good.
Gratch gave a gurgling giggle and then tried to push Richard back for more wrestling. Richard was relieved that the Gar was finally able to start catching his own food. He made Gratch sit still and settle down while he checked the rice and beans. He held the pot out.
You want some of my dinner with me?
Gratch leaned close and carefully smelled the pot. He knew it was hot. He had gotten a burn before and was careful now when Richard cooked things. He wrinkled his nose at the rice and beans. He made a croaking sound and rolled his shoulders. Richard knew that meant he wasn't enthusiastic, but if nothing better was forthcoming, he would have some. Richard poured him some in his own bowl.
Blow on it, it's hot.
Gratch held the tin bowl to his face and pursed his leathery lips. He blew air and spit between his fangs as he tried to cool his snack. Richard ate with a spoon as he watched the guard trying to lick the rice and beans from the bowl. Finally, Gratch rolled onto his back and, holding the bowl with his claws and feet, poured its contents in his mouth. In three swallows, it was gone. Gratch sat up and flapped his wings. He scooted close. With a plaintive babble, he held out his bowl to Richard. Richard showed him the empty pot.
All gone.
Gratch's ears wilted. He put a hooked claw to Richard's bowl and gave it a little tug. Richard pulled his bowl away and turned his back.
Mine! It's my dinner!
Gratch resigned himself to waiting patiently while Richard finished eating. When Richard pulled his knees up and wrapped his arms around them as he watched the city, Gratch squatted and tried to imitate his pose. Richard pulled the lock of hair from his pocket. He twirled it in the moonlight, staring while he watched it turning. Gratch thrust out a claw. Richard elbowed it away.
No,
he said in a low voice. You can touch it, but only if you're gentle. Gratch reached out tentatively, slowly, carefully touching a claw to the lock of hair. His glowing green eyes looked up, studying. He stroked the claw down Richard's hair. Gratch touched Richard's cheek, touched a tear rolling down. Richard sniffed and swallowed. He put the lock of hair back in his pocket. Gratch put a gangly arm around Richard's shoulder and laid his head against him. Richard put his arm around Gratch, and they watched the night for a time. Finally, deciding he had better get some sleep, Richard found a spot of thick grass on which to spread a blanket. He lay down with Gratch curled up close, and the two of them fell asleep together. Richard woke when the moon was nearly down. He sat up and stretched. Gratch made fists and imitated Richard, adding wings to the yawning stretch. Richard rubbed his eyes. It would be dawn in an hour or two. It was time. He stood, Gratch coming up beside him. I want you to listen to me, Gratch. I have some important things to tell you. Are you listening? Gratch nodded, his wrinkly face set in a serious cast. Richard pointed to the city. You see that place, with all the fire, all the light? I'm going to live there for a while. Richard tapped his chest and pointed to the city. I'm going to be down there, but I don't want you to visit me there. You must stay away. It's a dangerous place for you. You stay away. Gratch watched Richard's face. I'll come up here to visit you, all right? Gratch thought a moment and then nodded. You stay away from the city. And you see that river down there? You know what a river is. I've shown you water. You stay on this side of the water. This side. Understand? Richard didn't want the Gar hunting the livestock on the farms on the other side of the river. That would surely get him in trouble. Gratch looked from Richard's face to the city, and then back. He made a sound from deep in his throat to express his understanding. And Gratch, if you see any people... Richard tapped his chest and pointed to the city. People like me, don't you eat them. He put a finger in front of Gratch's face. People are not food. Don't eat any people, understand? Gratch growled in disappointment, and then nodded. Richard put an arm around the Gar's shoulders and turned him toward the Haken Woods. Now listen, this is important. You see that place down there, those woods? A low, menacing growl rose from the Gar's throat. His lips drew back from his fangs. The glow in his green eyes intensified. You stay out of there. I don't want you going into that place. I mean it, Gratch. You stay away. Gratch watched the woods, the growl still in his throat. Richard gripped a fistful of fur and gave him a shake. You stay away from there, understand? Gratch glanced over and finally nodded. I have to go in there, but you can't follow. It's dangerous in there for you. Stay out. With a plaintive puel, Gratch put an arm around Richard and pulled him back a step. I'll be safe. I have the sword. Remember the sword? I showed you my sword. It will protect me, but you can't come with me. Richard hoped he was right about the sword. Sister Verna had told him that the Hagen Woods were a place of vile magic, but he had no choice. It was the only plan he could think of. Richard gave the Gar a tight hug. You be a good boy. Go hunt yourself some more food. I'll be coming up here to see you, and we'll wrestle, all right? Gratch grinned at the mention of wrestling. He pulled hopefully on Richard's arm. Not now, Gratch. I have something I must do, but I'll come back on another night and wrestle with you. Gratch's ears wilted again. His long arms wrapped around Richard in a goodbye hug. Richard collected his things and, with a final wave, headed down into the swale. Gratch watched as the dark woods swallowed him up. Richard walked for close to an hour. He needed to be deep enough into the Hagen Woods to make sure his plan would work. Limbs draped with moss and vines looked like arms reaching out to snatch him. Sounds drifted through the trees, guttural clicking and long, low whistles. Off in stagnant stretches of water, things splashed at his approach. Warm, and breathing hard with the effort of the walk, he came to a small clearing, high enough to be dry and open enough to afford him the view of a small patch of stars. There was no rock or log in the clearing, so he flattened a thick clump of grass and sat down beside his pack, crossing his legs. He closed his eyes and drew a deep breath. Richard thought about home and the Heartland Woods. He longed to be back in his woods. He thought about the friends he missed so much, Chase and Zed. All the time he had grown up with the old man, Richard had never known Zed was his grandfather, but he had known he was his friend and that they loved each other. He guessed that was what mattered. What difference would it have made anyway? Richard could not have loved him more, and Zed could not have been more of a friend. It had been so long since he had seen Zed. Although he had seen him at the People's Palace in Dahara, he hadn't really had much time to talk with him, to catch up on things. He shouldn't have left so soon. He wished he could talk to Zed now, to seek his help and understanding. Richard had no idea if Kaelin would go to Zed. Why should she? She was rid of Richard, and that was what she wanted. He wished with all his heart it weren't so. He missed her smile, her green eyes, the soft sound of her voice, her intelligence and wit, her touch. She made the world alive for him. He would have given his life at that moment just to hold her for 5 minutes. But she knew what he was and had sent him away. And he had set her free. It was for the best. He wasn't good enough for her. Before he realized what he was doing, he was seeking the peace within himself, seeking his Han, as Sister Verna had taught him. He had practiced almost every day when he had been with her, and although he never felt his Han, whatever it was, it had always felt pleasant to seek it. It was relaxing and brought peace. It felt good to do that now. He let his mind find that place of peace and let his worries drift away. In his mind, as he always did, he pictured the Sword of Truth, floating in space before his mind's eye. He saw every detail of it, felt every detail of it. In his peace, in his meditation, without opening his eyes, Richard drew his sword. He wasn't quite sure why, except it felt the right thing to do. The unique ring of steel hung in the night air, announcing the blade's arrival to the Hagen Woods. He laid the sword across his knees. The magic danced with him in the place of peace. If anything came, he would be ready. Now he had to wait. It would be quite a while, he was sure, but she would come. When she realized where he was, she would come. As he sat still and quiet, the night returned to its normal activity around him. While he concentrated on the picture of the sword, Richard was vaguely aware of the chirps and clicks of bugs, the low, steady croaks of frogs, and the rustling of mice and voles among the dry debris of the forest floor. The air occasionally whirred with a bat. Once, he heard a squeak as an owl caught its dinner. And then, while in the dreamlike haze as he sat and pictured the sword, the night became still. In his mind, he saw the dark shape behind him. In one fluid moment, Richard was up and spinning, the sword tip whistling through the air. The flowing shape pitched back and lunged again when the sword was passed. Richard felt a thrill that he had missed, that it would not be ended so soon, that he could dance with the spirits, that he could let the rage free. It moved like a cape in the wind, dark as death and just as quick. Around the clearing they darted, the sword glinting in the waning light of the moon, the blade slicing the air, the dark shape's blade-like claws flashing past. Richard immersed himself in the sword's magic, in its wrath, in his own. He freed his anger and frustrations to join with the sword's own fury, reveling in the dance with death. Across the clearing they spun, like leaves in a gale, one avoiding the blade, the other the claws. Lunging and ducking, they used the trees for cover and attack. Richard let the spirits of the sword dance with him. He immersed himself in the magic's mastery. He let himself do as the spirits counseled, and he watched, almost in a detached state, as they spun him this way and that, had him skim across the ground, dodge right, then left, leap and thrust. He hungered to learn the dance. "Teach me!" Knowledge, like memory, flowed forth, forged by his will into the completing link. He became not the user of the sword, the magic, the spirits, but their master. The blade, the magic, the spirits, and the man were one. The dark shape lunged. Now, with a solid thwack, the blade halved the shape. A spray of blood hit the trees close by. A death howl shivered the air. And then all was still. Richard stood panting, almost sorry it was over. Almost. He had danced with the spirits of the dead, with the magic, and in so doing, had found the release he sought, release not only of some of his feelings of helpless frustration, but release, too, of darker needs, deep within himself, that he didn't understand. The sun had been up for nearly 2 hours when he heard her coming. She was blundering through the brush, huffing indignantly at branches that snagged her clothes. He could hear twigs snap as she staggered up the rise. Tugging her skirt free from a thorn, she stumbled into the clearing before him. Richard was sitting cross-legged, with his eyes closed and the sword resting across his knees. She came to a panting halt before him.
"Richard!"
"Good morning, Pasha." He opened his eyes.
"Beautiful day, isn't it?"
She held her long brown skirt up a little in her hands. Her white blouse was damp with sweat. Her hair had burrs in it. Pasha blew a strand of hair from her face.
"You have to get out of here at once, Richard. This is the Hagen Woods."
"I know. Sister Verna told me. Interesting place. I rather like it." She blinked at him.
"Richard, this place is dangerous. What are you doing here?"
Richard smiled to her.
"Waiting for you."
She peered around at trees and dark shadows.
"Something smells awful in here,"
she muttered. Pasha squatted down in front of him, smiling a little smile, as a person might to a child or to someone she thought was insane.
"Richard, you've had your fun, your nice walk in the country. Now give me your hand and let's get out of here."
"I'm not leaving until Verna is restored to sister again." Pasha shot to her feet.
"What?"
Richard took his sword in hand and rose in front of her. "I'm not leaving here until Verna is restored to the rank of sister, the same as she was before. The palace must choose what's more important to them, my life or keeping Sister Verna a novice." Pasha's mouth fell open.
"But the only one who can remove Verna's sanction is Sister Marin."
"I know." He touched his finger to her nose.
"That's why you're going to go and tell Sister Marin she must come here in person and give me her solemn pledge that Verna is once again a sister and agree to my terms." "You can't be serious. Sister Marin will not do that."
I'm not leaving this spot unless she does.
Richard, we'll go back and see if Sister Marin will discuss this, but you can't stay here. It's not worth dying for.
He regarded her with a cool expression. It is to me.
Her tongue wet her lips. Richard, you don't know what you're doing. This is a dangerous place. I'm responsible for you. I cannot allow you to stay here. If you won't come away with me, then I will have to use the collar and make you come with me. And I know you don't want that.
Richard's grip tightened on the sword's hilt. Sister Verna is being punished in retaliation against me. I have made a vow to myself to restore Verna to Sister. I can't allow the sanction to stand. I'll do whatever I must. Die here, if I have to. If you use the collar to hurt me or drag me off, I'll fight you with everything I have. I don't know who will win, but if that happens, I am sure of one thing. One of us will die. If it's you, then the war will have started. If I die, then your test to become a sister will end on the first day. Sister Verna will still be a novice, but that is where she stands now. At least I will have done my best.
You would be willing to die for this?
Yes. It's that important to me. I will not allow Sister Verna to be punished because of what I have done. It was unjust.
Her brow wrinkled. But Sister Marin is the headmistress of the novices. I'm a novice. I can't go to her and tell her she must reverse the order. She'll skin me alive.
I am the cause of the trouble. You are simply the messenger. If she punishes you, I would not stand for it any more than I will stand for what was done to Sister Verna. If Sister Marin wishes to start a war, then let it start. If she wishes to keep my truce, then she will have to come to me here and agree to my terms.
Pasha stared at him. Richard, if you are here when the sun goes down, you will die.
Then I would suggest you hurry.
She turned, holding her arm out toward the city. But I must go all the way back. It took me hours to get here. It will take me hours to go back, and then I must find Sister Marin, and then convince her that you're serious, and even if I could get her to agree to return with me, we must still get back here.
You should have ridden a horse.
But I ran here as soon as I realized where you were. I wasn't thinking about a horse or anything else. I knew there was trouble and just came after you.
He gave her an even look. Then you made a mistake, Pasha. You should have thought before you acted. Next time, maybe you will think first.
Pasha put a hand to her chest as she gulped air.
Richard, there is hardly time.
Then you'd better hurry or your new charge will be sitting here in Hagen Woods when the sun goes down.
Her eyes moistened with frustration and concern.
Richard, please, you don't understand. This is no game. This place is dangerous.
He turned a little and pointed with the sword.
Yes, I know. Pasha peered around him to the shadows and gasped. Hesitantly, she stepped to the thing by the trees. Richard didn't follow. He knew what was there. Two halves of a creature from a nightmare. Its guts spilled across the ground. Its sinuous head, like a man's, half melted into a snake or a lizard, was a picture of wickedness itself, covered in a glossy, tight black skin, smoothed down to the base of the thick neck where it began welting up into pliable scales. The lithe body was shaped much like a man's. The whole of the creature seemed made for fluid speed, deadly quick grace. It wore hides covered with short black hair and a full-length black hooded cape. What Richard had taken for claws were not claws, but three-bladed knives, one in each webbed hand with crosswise handles held in the fist. Steel extensions went up each side of the wrist for support when a strike was made. Pasha stood dumbstruck. Richard finally went to stand by her, looking down at the two halves of the thing. Whatever it was, it bled, the same as any other creature. And it smelled like fish guts rotting in the hot sun. Pasha stood trembling as she stared.
Dear Creator,
she whispered. It's a Mrizwith. She took a step back.
What happened to it?
What happened to it? I killed it. That's what happened to it. What sort of a thing is a Mrizwith?
Her big brown eyes came to his.
What do you mean you killed it? You can't kill a Mrizwith. No one has ever killed a Mrizwith.
Her face was a picture of consternation.
Well, Someone has killed one now.
You killed it at night, didn't you?
Yes, Richard frowned. How do you know that?
Mriswith are rarely seen outside Hagen Woods, but there have been reports over the last few thousand years, reports given by people who somehow managed to live long enough to tell what they saw. The Mriswith always take on the color of what is around them. In one report, one rose up in the tidal flats and was the color of mud. One time in the sand dunes, it was the color of the sand. One report noted that in the light of a golden sunset, the Mriswith was golden. When they kill at night, they're never seen because they are black, like the night. We think they have the ability, maybe the magic, to assume the color of their surroundings. Since this one is black, I guess that you killed it at night.
Richard took her arm, gently pulling her away. She seemed transfixed by the creature. He could feel her trembling under his hand. Pasha, what are they?
Things that live in the Hagen Woods. I don't know what they are. I've heard it said that in the war that separated the New World from the Old, the wizards created armies of the Mriswith. Some people believe the Mriswith are sent by the Nameless One. But the Hagen Woods are their home, and the home of other things. They are why no one lives out in the country on this side of the river. Sometimes they come out of the woods and hunt people. They never devour their kills. They seem simply to kill for the sake of killing. Mriswith disembowel their victims. Some live long enough to tell what got them. That is how we know as much as we know.
How long have the Hagen Woods, the creatures, been here?
As far as I know, at least as long as the Palace of the Prophets, nearly 3,000 years.
She took a fistful of his shirt.
In all that time, no one, not once, has ever killed a Mriswith. Every victim said that they never saw it until after it slashed them open. Some of those victims have been sisters and wizards, and not even their Han warned them. They said they were blind to its coming, as if they were born without the gift. How is it you were able to kill a Mriswith?
Richard remembered seeing it coming in his mind. He took her hand from his shirt. Maybe I was just lucky. Someone was bound to get one sooner or later. Maybe this one was just a half-wit.
Richard, please come away with me. This is not the way to have a test of wills with the palace. This could get you killed.
I'm not testing anyone's will. I'm taking responsibility for my actions. It's my fault Sister Verna was demoted. I've got to set it straight. I'm taking the stand for what's right. If I don't do that, then I am nothing.
Richard, if the sun sets on you in the Hagen Woods, you're wasting precious time, Pasha.
Chapter 52. It was late afternoon when he heard them coming. He heard the sound of only one horse and Pasha's voice calling out the direction. At last they broke into the clearing. Richard sheathed his sword.
Bonnie!
He gave the horse's neck a scratch. How are you doing, girl? Bonnie nuzzled his chest. Richard pushed his fingers in the side of her mouth and felt the bit while Sister Marin frowned at him.
I'm glad to see you use a snaffle bit, sister.
The stable boys said they couldn't find the spade bits.
She glared down at him suspiciously.
Seems they vanished, mysteriously.
That's so,
Richard shrugged.
Can't say I'm sorry.
Pasha was panting with the effort of having kept up with the sister on her horse. Her white blouse was soaked with sweat. She fussed hopelessly with the matted, tangled mess of her hair. The sister must have made Pasha walk as punishment. Sister Marin, in her plain brown dress buttoned to her neck, looked cool and comfortable atop the horse.
So, Richard, Sister Marin said as she dismounted, I am here as you requested. What is it you want?
She knew very well what he wanted, but Richard decided to restate it in a pleasant tone. It's quite simple. Sister Verna is to be restored to Sister at once, and you are also to return her Dakra to her. She gestured dismissively. And here I thought you would want something unreasonable. This is simple. It is done. Verna is returned to Sister. It makes no difference to me. And when she asks why, I don't want you to tell her about this business with me. Just say you reconsidered or something and decided to reinstate her. If you want, you can tell her you prayed for guidance from your Creator and it came to you that she should remain a sister. She brushed some of her fine sandy hair back from her face. That would suit me. Are you satisfied?
Is everything to your liking?
That would end it, and keep our truce.
Good. Now that the trifling matters are dispensed with, show me this dead bear.
Pasha has half the palace in an uproar with some babble about you killing him, Rizwith.
Pasha furiously studied the ground as Sister Marin directed a scolding frown in her direction.
The foolish child never sets her slippered foot on anything that hasn't been swept, scrubbed, or polished. The only time she sticks her head out of doors is to see the latest bolt of lace to come into Tanimura. She wouldn't know a rabbit from an ox, and she certainly wouldn't know a...
What is that smell?
Bear guts, Richard said. He held out his arm, showing her the way. Pasha deferentially stepped aside. Sister Marin straightened her dress at her hips and marched toward the trees. Pasha peeked up at him, and when they heard Sister Marin gasp, her head came the rest of the way up, and she smiled. When Sister Marin stepped backward to them, her face white as bedsheets, Pasha resumed her study of the ground. Sister Marin's trembling fingers lifted Pasha's chin.
"You have spoken the truth," she whispered. "Forgive me, child."
Pasha curtsied.
"Of course, Sister Marin. Thank you for taking the time to witness my report."
Sister Marin's haughty attitude had vanished, to be replaced by sincere concern. She turned to Richard.
"How did this creature die?"
Richard lifted the sword clear of its scabbard a half foot and then slid it home.
"Then what Pasha said is true? You killed it?"
Richard shrugged. "I spend quite a lot of my time out of doors. I knew it was no rabbit." Sister Marin returned to the creature, mumbling to herself.
"I must study it. This is an unprecedented opportunity."
Pasha looked to Richard and wrinkled her nose in disgust as the sister ran her finger over the lipless slit of a mouth, touched the ear holes, and ran her hand across the glossy black skin. She tugged at the hide clothes, pulling them this way and that as she inspected them. She rose to her feet, peering down at the entrails. Finally, she turned to Richard.
"Where is the cape? Pasha said it had a cape."
When the Mrizwith had lunged, and he had sliced it in two, the cape had been billowed open and so it was undamaged. While Richard had been waiting for Pasha to return with the sister, he had accidentally learned the astonishing thing the cape could do. After that, he had washed it clean of blood, hung it over branches to dry, and then stuffed it away in his pack. He had no intention of giving that cape away. "It's mine. It is a prize of battle. I'm keeping it." She looked perplexed.
"But the knives, don't men fancy things like that as prizes of battle? Why would you want a cape instead of the knives?"
Richard tapped the hilt. "I have my sword. Why would I want knives that have proven inferior to my sword? I've always wanted a long black cape, and it's a fine one, so I'm keeping it." The furrows of her scowl stole back onto her face.
"Is this another condition of your truce?"
"If need be."
The furrows softened. She sighed. "I guess it doesn't matter. It is the creature that is important, not its cape." She turned back to the reeking corpse. "I must study this."
While she bent back to the Mrizwith, Richard hooked his bow, quiver of arrows, and pack to the front of the saddle. He put his foot in the stirrup and sprang up onto Bonnie.
"Don't stay after the sun goes down, Sister Marin."
She glanced over her shoulder.
"My horse! You can't have my horse."
Richard smiled apologetically. "I twisted my ankle fighting the Mrizwith. I'm sure you wouldn't want the palace's newest pupil limping all the way back home now, would you? I might fall and crack my skull."
"But..."
Richard reached down and gripped Pasha's arm. She gasped in surprise as he yanked her up, sitting her behind him on Bonnie.
"Please don't let the sun set on you here, sister. I hear it's dangerous in the Hagen woods after dark."
Pasha hid her face from the sister, and he could feel her giggling softly against his back.
"Yes, yes,"
Sister Marin said, her eyes already lost to the Mrizwith.
"All right, you two go on back. You have done well, both of you. I must study this creature before the animals get to it."
Pasha held him so tight that he could hardly breathe. It was distracting to feel her firm breasts mashed against his back. Her fingers gripped his chest, trying to get a better hold on him, as if she was afraid she might fall at any moment. When they were clear of the woods and into the open hills,
He slowed Bonnie to a walk and pried Pasha's hands off. She clamped them right back.
Richard, I might fall.
He pulled her hands loose again. You're not going to fall. Just hold on easy and let your hips move with the horse. Use your balance. You don't need to cling for dear life. She gripped his sides.
Well, I'll try.
The sky was turning golden as they descended the rounded hills toward the city. Richard swayed with Bonnie's steps as she went over rocks and across shallow ravines and thought about the Mrizwith and his hunger to fight it. The craving to go back into the Hagen Wood still burned in the back of his mind.
Your ankle isn't really twisted, is it?
Pasha asked after a long ride in silence. No.
You lied to a sister. Richard, you must learn that lying is wrong. The Creator hates lies.
So Sister Verna has told me. He decided he didn't want to ride anymore, with her holding on to him, so he dismounted and led Bonnie by the reins. Pasha scooted forward into the saddle.
Then why did you do it, if you know it's wrong?
Because I wanted to make Sister Marin walk back. She made you walk all the way out there again as punishment for something that was not your fault. Pasha slid off Bonnie and came up to walk beside him. She raked her fingers through her hair, trying to arrange it to her satisfaction.
That was very nice of you.
She put a hand on his arm.
I think we're going to become good friends.
Richard pretended to turn and look around as he walked, so that her arm fell away. Can you get this collar off me?
The Radahan? Well, no. Only a full sister is able to remove a Radahan. I don't know how.
Then we are not going to be friends. I have no use for you.
You have gone to great risk for Sister Verna. She must be your friend. A person only does such things for friends. You went out of your way to see that I had a horse to ride back. You must hope we can become friends.
Richard watched the country ahead as he walked. Sister Verna is not my friend. I did as I did only because what was done to her was my fault and was unjust. That is the only reason. When I decide to get this collar off, only those who help me will be my friends. Sister Verna has made it clear that she will not help me get the collar off. She intends that it remain on me. When the time comes, if she stands in my way, I will kill her, the same as I will kill any other sister who tries to stop me, the same as I will kill you if you stand in my way.
Richard, she scoffed, you're a mere student. You shouldn't brag about your power so. It's unbecoming to a young man. You should not even joke about such things.
She took his arm again.
I don't believe you would ever hurt a woman.
Then you believe wrong.
Most young men have trouble adjusting at first, but you will come to trust in me. We will become friends, I'm sure of it.
Richard yanked his arm away and spun to her. This is no game, Pasha. If you get in my way when I decide the time has come, I will cut your pretty little throat. She peered up at him with a coy smile. Do you